Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
Well, both Joe Biden and Donald Trump have clinched the nomination of their parties to run for re-election, which means, historically, this will be the longest general election in history between a pair of candidates too old for the job, whom no one wants to see run again, except those Republican voters who love Donald Trump, and those Democrat voters who feel, well, at least Biden is not a goggle-eyed socialist lunatic like every other Democrat, but only a senile semi-dead man being used like a ventriloquist dummy by a cabal of goggle-eyed socialist lunatics who hope they can destroy American freedom before anyone realizes they're holding Biden upright by his shirt sleeves like in Weekend at Bernie's. Although in this case, Bernie is the goggle-eyed socialist holding Bernie up because Bernie is Joe and Joe is Bernie. With a Biden-Trump rematch bearing down on us like a locomotive and America tied to the tracks, screaming, help, help, in a high-pitched voice in the hope some Canadian Mountie will rescue her, which seems unlikely since the Canadians are now a bunch of left-wing fascists, corporate media outlets are assigning their best journalists to cover the all-important beat of what Trump will do in their hysterical, womanish imaginations if he's reelected. For instance, CNN's Van Jones, reporting from his womanish imagination, said, quote, if Trump is reelected, Russian troops will march across Western Europe in my womanish imagination until the whole world is as hysterical as I am. Trump will imprison his political opponents and destroy democracy, which is why we have to put Trump in prison and let people vote by simply driving by the polling place and shouting Joe Biden's name out the window, or what sounds to me like Joe Biden's name, even if it's Donald Trump's. This is Van Jones reporting from my womanish imagination, unquote. CNN chief executive Solitary McLonesome spoke about the new assignments in a speech to his childhood friend Pookie the teddy bear, saying, quote, listen, Pookie, we have got to go all out covering the Trump atrocities that will occur in our womanish imaginations or will be left behind in reality with a senile corruptocrat president ruining everything. And you know our audience doesn't want reality, Pookie Poo, because you are our audience, unquote. MSNBC has given Joe Scarborough the assignment of reporting on the imaginary bad things Trump will do if reelected because of Scarborough's long experience on the womanish imagination beat. NBC News president, ideologue, speaking to an inflatable life-sized El Chapo she keeps hidden in her bedroom closet, said, quote, viewers feel they can trust Joe Scarborough because they look into his eyes and see a cavernous darkness where his soul used to be. So they understand he will give them a full report on the terrible things Trump will do in his womanish imagination if reelected, instead of the horrible truth about what's happening right now, which would just be disturbing, oh mi corazón, unquote. As a model of expert coverage of the womanish imagination beat, journalists around the country are turning to the New York Times, a former newspaper, and their opinion page known throughout the industry as Knucklehead Row. One shining example of the Times Pulitzer Prize-winning womanish imagination coverage came in a column by Charles Blows entitled, What Trump Will Do in My Womanish Imagination If He's Reelected. The column begins, quote, when I consider the possibility that Trump will be reelected, I peer into my womanish imagination and see a devastating vision of utter chaos created by journalists shrieking about what's happening in their womanish imaginations. The stories about Donald Trump rampaging through our hysterical daydreams will absolutely destroy our country by causing violent leftists to burn down cities while we pretend they aren't because Trump is not doing the horrible things that we pretend he is, unquote. At the Washington Post, leftist womanish imagination reporter Dana Milbank took a more humorous tack in a column, and this is a real column, called My Month of Living Republicanly. Milbank visited gun shows and Christian outlets where he found stickers and posters with outlandish assertions that distort the truth. Next week, Milbank will uncover outlandish leftist assertions that distort the truth by reading the Washington Post. Trigger warning, I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show. All right. We are back laughing our way through the fall of the Republic. You know, if you are not reading the New Jerusalem Substack that I'm doing with my son, Spencer, you should be reading the New Jerusalem Substack that I'm doing with my son, Spencer. No relation, but it's he and I are ourselves amazed at what it is. It is a really beautiful conversation between us. If I say so myself, because I too am shocked. About faith in the modern age and transhumanism and things like that, and dealing with all kinds of issues. And it's just, you can subscribe to it for free. You can just go online and read it. It is thenewjerusalem.substack.com. Thenewjerusalem.substack.com. Try it out, really. You'll see what I'm talking about. Also subscribe to the Andrew Klavan YouTube channel, where you will get exclusive content shipped to you directly, wrapped in pornography, so no one will know that you're looking at right-wing content. We also post all our interviews on there. We post them also on our audio feeds, anywhere you get your podcasts. Last week was Ann Coulter. Terrific interview with Ann Coulter. This week, I have San Francisco Police Sergeant Adam Plantinga, who I've talked to a number of times for research, but he has now got a new novel out called The Ascent. I believe it's been optioned by Netflix, and it is really, really good. Also, if you leave a comment on YouTube, and the comment is absolutely morally reprehensible, we will read it on the show, because morally reprehensible is my middle name. That's why it takes me so long to say my name, Andrew Morally Reprehensible. Klavan, today's comment is from Legendary Farm and Homestead, saying that was the best intro, guaranteed to piss off just about everyone. I love it. They're talking about the satire about the far right and the far left. And if you're around for Member Block, I've got a very interesting letter from a guy, I think his name is Roan or Rowan, protesting against it, which I in a very interesting, intelligent way. So I will be talking about that on Member Block. But let's get right to today's episode, Princess Kate and Catfish Girl. Now, today's show has a theme, and the theme is this. Everything comes at a price, but when the benefit is material and the price is spiritual, we simply don't talk about it, partly because our press is corrupt, partly because everybody's corrupt, partly because we're living in a materialist world, but that is how we get screwed. So let's get right to chapter one, The Price of Power.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
I had a funny experience on Megyn Kelly's show this week. You know, when you do a talk show, a lot of times they'll just send you a little note about what they want to talk about. And one thing she wanted to talk about was this cut of South Carolina Congresswoman Nancy Mace talking to ABC's George Snuffleupagus on ABC This Week. Cut two.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not gonna do that.
Well, good for her, first of all. And I just want to say that I feel really bad. I used to call her Sexy Nancy because of a silly remark she made at a prayer breakfast about her fiance wanting to have sex with her. But she said, no, I have to go to a prayer breakfast. But I'm not going to call her that anymore because I didn't actually know that she had been assaulted. And it's not as funny, obviously. But anyway, I went on Megyn Kelly and I'm loaded for bear because I've written an entire articles about George Stephanopoulos and I know everything about the guy. And this thing was particularly offensive. So I'm ready. I'm really ready to go. I mean, one of the things about him is his job in 1991 on the Clinton campaign was silencing women who had been abused, who said were allegedly abused and raped by Bill Clinton. That was his job. There's a whole movie about it called The War Room, in which there are scenes of him on the phone. They called them bimbo eruptions. These were women who had been abused by Bill Clinton. I mean, everybody said it was true. And his job was to silence them and intimidate reporters into not covering them. And here is a scene from The War Room in which he intimidates a reporter, telling her she'll never work in Democrat politics again if she reports this thing.
Let's take it at two levels. Number one, of course, it's not going to matter. But number two, think of yourself. I guarantee you that if you do this, you'll never work in Democratic politics again. Maybe you don't want to. I'm not saying it matters. You will be embarrassed before the National Press Corps. People will think, nobody will believe you, and people will think you're scummy. That the alternative is you don't do it. It causes you some temporary pain with people who tomorrow aren't going to matter. And you have a campaign that understands that in a difficult time, you did something right. And, you know, that's important.
So he silenced rape victims, alleged rape victims. He was trying to silence Nancy Mace by bringing up her rape. He was hired by ABC right out of the Clinton administration when he left after, I think, the first term. He had no journalistic experience, but he went right to, not immediately, but very quickly became the host of This Week, that show we were just watching. He went to a party honoring Jeffrey Epstein after Epstein was finished serving time for his 2008 conviction for procuring a child for prostitution and soliciting a prostitute. And you may remember he served 13 months with work release and all this. And it was this slap on the wrist, a plea deal. And Trump's labor secretary, Alex Acosta, had to resign when it came out because he arranged the plea deal. And obviously Epstein was guilty of so much more than that. On top of which, you will remember in 2019, Project Veritas got this video of Amy Robach, an ABC anchorwoman, on a hot mic saying she had the Epstein story, and it got quashed at ABC. Cut four.
I've had the story for 3 years. I've had this interview with Virginia Roberts. We would not put it on the air. First of all, I was told, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who that is. This is a stupid story. Then the palace found out that we had her whole allegations about Prince Andrew and threatened us a million different ways. We were so afraid we wouldn't be able to interview Kate and Will that also quashed the story. She told me everything. She had pictures. She had everything. It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton, we had everything.
And Hillary Clinton was running for president. And the ABC said that George Stephanopoulos had nothing to do with the decision to spike the story. George Stephanopoulos was the chief anchor of ABC at the time. I could go on with this for 20 minutes. So I'm sitting waiting to go on with Megyn, and I've got this thing just laid out. This guy would dare to try and silence Nancy Mace by bringing up her rape because he doesn't like the fact that she endorsed Donald Trump, who has not been convicted of rape, no matter how Stephanopoulos spins that stupid Jean Carroll case. So I'm loaded for bear, and Megyn says, okay, I'm just going to do my opening, and then you can go. And of course, she just does the whole thing. She does the entire thing that I just said and more in a beautifully written opening. So I'm just sitting there going, I wasn't sure. I was so ready. However, there was one more point I wanted to make about this. George can do that. He can do that. And you can't expect Congresswoman Mace to know all this stuff or think about it off the top of her head. But he knew that nobody was going to bring it up because that is the power of owning the press. That was what he did depended on his power. It depended on him being surrounded by people who were going to back him up, not on ABC, on every network, on every show, on PBS, on everywhere. They were going to make Nancy Mace look like the culprit. Here is an example. Joe Scarborough, a man who used to be Joe Scarborough when he still had a soul. This is cut five.
She knows. She is defending, she is endorsing, she is all behind a man who a judge said raped another woman and then defamed her. Talk about shaming a woman if she's so concerned about rape victims being shamed. What about what Donald Trump does to his rape victim? Judge said she's a rape victim. Day in and day out.
Now, there was a soul in that body once, but we don't have to worry about that anymore, obviously. So the power that George Stephanopoulos knows he has in that moment is amazing. It is not just the power of being a top guy at ABC. It is not just the power of ABC being a big network. It's the power that the entire media is corrupt. The entire mainstream media is corrupt. But the price of that power is a spiritual price, which is no one believes them anymore. 32% of the population reports having a great deal or a fair amount of confidence that the media reports the news in a full, fair, and accurate way, but only because 58% of Democrats and other idiots trust them, 11% of Republicans trust them, 29% of independents. Nobody really trusts them. It's just Democrats hear what they want to hear, so they believe it. And in a republic where the people are sovereign, if only one side trusts you, you are inherently not doing your job. So this is also true of medicine, right? They have a lot of power. They had a lot of authority, but they used it in the COVID epidemic. And now 29% of U.S. adults, this is according to Pew, 29% of U.S. adults now have a great deal of confidence in medical scientists. They don't believe in scientists anymore. Why? Same reason. They used their power through the news media, through the corrupt news media. Let's play this little montage from our friends at Grabian.
President Trump wrote on Twitter, "Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life." Don't let it dominate your life?
In terms of responding to a comment like that, it's gross.
It's okay to be afraid of COVID, and it's okay that it's dominating your life.
Everyone should be afraid of COVID.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
I can't come in, Mom. It's because of this flu thing.
We won't be free of this pandemic until we listen to the acknowledged truth. Listen to the scientists.
Science is truth.
You know, science is truth.
What is the impact to public health when people are openly questioning the science?
Science is a way of finding the truth, but scientists are people and people suck. So that, you know, now people don't trust the science anymore. They have paid this price. What about the rule of law? All these indictments of Donald Trump for things that no one else has ever been indicted for, that other politicians in his position have not been indicted for. When you have Merrick Garland, corrupt attorney general, as I say, under the Democrats, the title should be changed. He should no longer be called attorney general, should be CAG, corrupt attorney general. He was speaking at a Black Baptist church in Selma on the anniversary of Bloody Sunday. That's when the police went after the civil rights demonstrators on the Pettus Bridge. And he says they're going to make sure that nobody needs ID to vote. By golly, cut six.
The right to vote is still under attack. And that is why the Justice Department is fighting back. That is why one of the first things I did when I came into office was to double the size of the voting section of the Civil Rights Division. That is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot, including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements.
Voter ID requirements? Of course you have to identify yourself. Oh, no, you don't, because maybe you don't actually belong here. Maybe you're a newcomer, I should say. I shouldn't say an illegal immigrant. I mean a newcomer illegal immigrant. What happens when people stop trusting in the rule of law? What is the price of that going to be? What do they think it's going to be? What do they think that's going to look like? But they don't think, because they're materialists and they don't believe in spiritual prices. But this is a spiritual price that they are going to pay for the power that they have mishandled. You know, you can sit around these guys who are screaming, you know, Donald Trump will do this, we'll do that. But Donald Trump didn't do any of those things and he's not going to start now. They're doing them. They are in the process of doing them. He talked about mail-in voting. The New York Times in 2012 said votes cast by mail are less likely to be counted, more likely to be compromised, and more likely to be contested than those cast in a voting booth, statistics show. But once Donald Trump complained about mail-in voting because he knew that they were trying to steal the election, suddenly the New York Times ran long, long stories on just how secure it is, never quoting the statistics. They stopped doing that. They stopped looking at the statistics and just started telling us why we should trust them. They can win these fights today. They can humiliate Nancy Mace, you know, on TV, and they can get her on her back foot. But there's a price, and they are going to pay it, and they're going to pay it soon too. This is not a joke. You know, these are, as Joe Biden himself might say, this is a thing that is going to snap back on them very, very quickly. It's going to be much, much harder for people to trust an election if they win it. It's going to be much, much harder for people to care whether Donald Trump is convicted or not. They keep thinking, oh, if he's convicted, his support will crumble. Really? Really? Who trusts these people anymore? There's a price you pay for everything. And in America, we no longer ever talk about the spiritual price if there's a material gain. And the thing is, you lose trust, you lose the people, you lose everything. As you know, I don't sleep long, but now I can fall asleep because I use Beam Dream. Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, L-theanine, apigenin. I don't care what's in it. I just want it to put me to sleep, and it does. And it also has melatonin. Helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. It's not just your run-of-the-mill sleep aid. It's a concoction carefully crafted to let you ease into sleep without the grogginess that often accompanies other sleep remedies. Sleep is the foundation of our mental health and physical health. You must have a consistent nighttime routine to function at your best. Today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best-selling hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar, now available in delicious flavors like cinnamon cocoa, chocolate peanut butter, and mint chip. Better sleep has never tasted better. Just mix Beam Dream into hot water or milk, stir or froth. That's what I use. I use this little frothing machine. It's great. And you can enjoy it before bedtime. If you find yourself battling the bedtime blues, give it a shot. Your weary self will thank you. It does work for me, I have to say. It really puts you right out. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/Klavan and use code Klavan at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Klavan with my promo code Klavan for up to 40% off your order. And you're probably saying to yourself, Beam, I can spell Beam. It's B-E-A-M. But how, oh how, please tell me how do you spell Klavan? Here's how.
K-L-A-V-A-N, there are no E's in Klavan.
All right, that brings us to chapter two, TikTok, TikTok. Now, when you talk about the spiritual prices you pay, obviously the internet and social media are a place where we're getting enormous benefits, enormous benefits. I think the first podcast I ever did on the Daily Wire, it may have been the very first one, I was talking about a panel I did with Naomi Schaefer Riley, who is just an absolutely lovely person. And she was saying, oh, the internet is, she has children, is so hard on my children. They say this terrible things and these, you know, awful sex stuff is coming over. And I said, man, I remember what it was like to do research. And I do remember what it was like to do research before the internet. And where you'd sit in a library and you'd fill out things with a stub of a pencil and an old man would come in and carry it off. And I finally said, you know, if we have a few children have to be sold into sex slavery, it's a small price to pay. I was joking. I thought the joke was, you know, there's a price to pay for everything. And this is a new thing and it's bringing wonders, but it's also a problem. So the House has voted in an amazing bipartisan vote, really surprising bipartisan vote. It's 352 to 65. They passed a bill, which still has to go through the Senate, telling TikTok that they either have to sever their connection to their parent company, ByteDance, which is essentially the Chinese Communist Party, in 6 months, or they're going to get shut down. And you know, it's like Jim Jordan and Nancy Pelosi both support this bill, and AOC and MTG are both against it. They have free speech concerns. I don't think actually this does damage free speech. I have one, from what I've seen, I haven't read the whole bill, but what I've seen of it, the one thing I have worries about, I mean, of course China shouldn't have an influential social media platform in our country. That's ridiculous. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It does give the president a little too much power to decide what is a foreign influence, because we all remember when Donald Trump was a Russian spy. Remember that? The trench coat and the hat pulled down because he was a Russian spy. So anyway, Steve Mnuchin, Trump's former Treasury Secretary, is putting together a consortium to buy it away. And, you know, this is something Trump tried to do this with an executive order, but they wouldn't let him. And now he's kind of pulled back. He's saying there's good and there's bad with TikTok, and he doesn't want. He's afraid that Facebook will become too powerful if TikTok goes down, and he hates Facebook because they tampered with his election, which they really did with the Zuckerbucks. It's obvious to me that this vote, which came very suddenly, it took TikTok off guard. This vote came after a security meeting, where clearly these Congress people were shown material that showed that they're just stealing all this data. It's not just the stuff that they're pumping in. They're pouring this mental sewage into our country. It's also the fact that they're stealing everybody's data. And that's not a good look for our major geopolitical enemy. But I just want to point out one other thing. I want to point out how often the sickness that they sell to us has to do with corrupting gender roles, because this is the spiritual price that I want to deal with next in the next segment. And it's so important. The fact that China, that won't allow effeminate entertainers to go on television, they don't want people to be infected with the idea of gay people or effeminate people, they are pouring this garbage into the minds of our young people, the people who mostly use TikTok. It is a hub of child exploitation. And there's stuff like this. This is an amalgam of put together, supercut of this guy, Jeffrey Marsh, who is a transgender guy who tries to talk kids into transgenderism and into separating from their parents, which is genuine cult stuff. That's what cults always do. First, they separate you from your parents. Here's just a cut of some of the stuff that he sells on TikTok.
I am estranged from my parents, and we haven't spoken in years.
See, what I think happened is you had bad parents.
Toxic parent has no sense of themselves.
Well, I'll tell you what toxic/abusive parents do. I coach a lot of people one-on-one who want to go no contact with their parents and cannot bring themselves to admit it.
And so if you go no contact, if you decide to walk out of that relationship,
here are three ways to go no contact.
So this is it's not just what he is selling, and I think you should be arrested for that, but this is what the Chinese want to come be piped in. And there have been studies, the Wall Street Journal has done studies that found that TikTok steers viewers to dangerous content, especially teenagers. But the news media is no better. This is something else, with this transgender stuff. I'm sure you've heard of this Next Benedict story. There's a 16-year-old girl in Oklahoma who said she was non-binary, a word that means nothing. She's non-binary. She got in a fight in the girls' bathroom. It's not clear who started the fight. It was other girls. She is a girl. She identifies as non-binary, but she was born a girl. She got in a fight in the girls' bathroom with some other girls. And a day later, she died. And the news media immediately seized on this to sell their transgender ideology. The New York Times ran a story headlined, "Anti-Trans Policies Draw Scrutiny After 16-Year-Old's Death in Oklahoma." You're like, scrutiny from whom? The New York Times, of course. MSNBC covered it this way. It's cut 17.
Their death is coming as Oklahoma lawmakers have introduced 54 bills targeting members of the LGBTQ community, the state with the highest number of anti-LGBTQ bills in the nation. And that's according to the ACLU. With us now to talk more about this is Kelly Robinson, president of the Human Rights Campaign. Kelly, thanks for joining us on this. Appreciate it. What do you want to see happen here?
There has to be full accountability. It does not take an expert to connect the dots on what happened in this tragic case. We saw a state that leads the pack in anti-LGBTQ plus laws, a state that has pushed forward anti-trans bathroom bills, gender-affirming care bans. We're trying to get book bans across the finish line.
Book bans. So there has to be accountability. Well, it turned out this poor girl killed herself. It had nothing to do with this fight. She overdosed. And at the same time, England's National Health, which is by no means a, cesspit of conservatives like us, England's National Health is obviously a socialist organization. They banned the use of puberty blockers for children seeking treatment for gender dysphoria, citing the fact that there's not enough research. The research that comes out of America is completely unreliable. There's one study taken from registers in Sweden that found that those who had their sex reassigned were more likely to have died by suicide. So if we're going to hold people accountable, maybe the people we should hold accountable for Nex's death are the transgender people. Maybe this ideology is very, very sick. Now, I don't want to pick on people who have gender dysphoria. We have other people in the Daily Wire who do that for you. But I do want to talk about the price of feminism, because feminism has brought certain values to some women. I think it has elevated some women. It has freed some women in their choices. I think it has done some good things in terms of allowing women not to be passed from father to husband like a piece of property. But It has also had tremendously bad ones, and the bad things are all spiritual. They're the death of marriage and the fat, I think, fatter children. Women are more unhappy than they've ever been. But the most important thing is confusion about what femininity is. You know, Matt Walsh made that great film, What is a Woman? And it ends with Mrs. Walsh, Alyssa, saying, you know, a woman is a adult human female. But that doesn't really say it, does it? I mean, I could come up with a very specific scientific definition of what a woman is, but there's more to being a woman than that. When we talk about women, when we think about women, when we plunge deeper into our minds about what a woman is, we think about a lot more than that. And it may be one of the most important things. There used to be a movie called Mars Needs Women. Earth needs women too. And it needs its women to be feminine. It needs femininity. And only women have femininity. Only women can be feminine. So let's take a look at chapter 3, Kate and Hannah. No one likes to talk about life insurance, but it's incredibly important, and you need to include it in your financial planning this year. Start shopping now with Policy Genius. Find the right policy to protect your family today and give yourself the peace of mind that comes with knowing that if something were to happen to you, your family can cover all their expenses while getting back on their feet. Policy Genius's technology makes comparing life insurance quotes from America's top insurers easy in just a few clicks. I have tried it. It is very easy. You already have a life insurance policy through work, but that might not offer enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. You need a backup plan. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius has licensed agents who can help you find the best fit for your needs. When they make it this easy, there's no excuse not to do it. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they are not incentivized to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance. Save time, money, and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com/Klavan or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com/Klavan. Cover your family, but also learn how to spell Klavan. There are no E's in Klavan. I just make it look this easy.
There are no E's in Klavan.
Two things on X this week really caught my attention. One was this brouhaha over Princess Kate, who went into hospital for abdominal surgery. The palace has not really told us very much about it. And she hasn't been seen since, except in one blurred photo in a car. She put out a family picture on Mothering Sunday, which is their Mother's Day. It's also a church holiday. And the picture was obviously doctored, and so she had to apologize, or the palace apologized. They've gone nuts on X trying to figure out what happened, and most social media, you know, she's obvious. I have to assume she's ill. She's obviously very ill, but nobody knows what it is. She's dead. She's had her face lifted. She's had a nervous breakdown. She's run away, you know, whatever. All the speculation, just absolute spreading like wildfire. The other thing that caught my attention was Hannah Baron, who puts out videos where she catches gigantic catfish, and she dives into the water, catches a catfish, and she's building a house, you know, and she takes you out and shows you all the, you know, all the things that she's put together. You know, she's not doing it alone, obviously, but so somebody, a conservative woman with a fairly large following on X, said her accent needs to be illegal, and women should be banned from doing manual labor like this. There is nothing feminine about American women. American women are literally men. So here is Hannah's response, cut nine, so you can hear her accent.
But apparently I'm trending on Twitter right now because some girl, hey Merle, some girl said that my accent should be illegal. Women shouldn't do manual labor. What else did she say? American women are basically men, and she just said that I was not feminine. Ooh. And I would tell y'all this girl's name, but I can't remember it because I don't have a clue who she is. So that should tell you how relevant this person is. But I just think it's hilarious because I grew up as the weird kid in high school who hunted and fished too much because back then it wasn't cool.
So first of all, this young lady, it seems to me utterly adorable. She she seems feminine. She seems a very feminine young lady who happens to like to do this. That's her personality. Not every guy is going to want a girl like that, but so what? You know, not every, you know, that's the way life works, right? We're individuals. The question with a woman is whether if your best friend brought her home and said he was going to marry her, would you take him aside and say, no, that's a big mistake. And obviously with this adorable, sweet natured person, assuming she is what she seems to be on the video, you know, you'd congratulate him and think it was great and ask her to help you build your house. But the reason all of this caught my attention is because it keeps happening with women, especially, right? Taylor Swift, people go nuts. You know, Taylor Swift is having an affair with the football guy, Jason Kelsey. Is it Jason Kelsey? Travis Kelsey, sorry. You know, Twitter goes nuts, especially conservative Twitter. Sydney Sweeney wears a low-cut dress on SNL. People go crazy every time. It's these women. It's people trying to capture something about femininity and feeling that we are in a fight about what femininity is. Princess Kate, obviously a real representation of something deeply, deeply feminine, a deeply feminine role model, beautiful, poised, graceful, charitable, motherly. You know, this is her image. And I think people are worried. The reason they're getting so crazy about it is not just because she's so popular, but also they're worried that they're afraid she's going to turn out like Princess Di did, that all of that is just an illusion and she's not really the person that we hope she is. I mean, she's just a very, very appealing because she is such an icon of femininity. Feminism, right, which is socialism. Feminism is socialism, just like, you know, identity politics is socialism and transgender politics is socialism. It's all just people being manipulated by those who want to accrue power and accumulate more power for the government. That's all it is. Feminism has tried to beat out of us this femininity and this love of femininity. You know, conservatives are always saying there's a war against men. And I've said this before, but I'll say it again. It is not a war against men. They are attacking men because they want to feminize men so that women can become like men, because socialism needs to get women out of the house, because femininity, as opposed to feminism, femininity is a spiritual aspect of a person. It is not something that just comes because of your body. It is something that is transmitted through something beyond your body, you know, that your body simply represents. That is why the transgender people can make the argument that you can become a woman simply by being a feminine man, but you can't. You can only become an effeminate man. But look at what they're trying to do to men. If you watch the Oscars, which I only could tune in for moments at a time, the big thing that the New York Times every day has an article about how great divorce is. If it's not every day, it's every other day. Oh, I got divorced. I'm so happy now. It's so much more fun raising my kids without my husband. It's much better being divorced, much better being. This is what they're trying to do. They're trying to destroy the family, and the family depends on the feminine. It depends on women being the homemaker and the person who brings people into the world, but also brings humanity out of the people they bring into the world. So on the Oscars, they had Ken, the song I'm Just Ken by Ryan Gosling. And this is cut 14. And just look at a little bit of a clip. You can hear him singing it if you're not watching it. It's, well, go ahead and play it and then I'll describe it.
I'm just Ken. Anywhere else I'd be a tech. Is it my destiny to live and die a life of blind fragility?
So he's dressed in pink. They're slapping each other. The guys, the dancers that he's with have these kind of, I don't know what they're called, these kind of striped sashes, red sashes. Now, here is a famous, famous number from an old Marilyn Monroe film called Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. We'll just play a little bit of that.
No. No, 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 no.
So it's the same number, essentially, same guys with the striped, the striped sash across their shirt, slapping people and all this. So the ultimate woman, who was Marilyn Monroe, right? There is no greater icon of that sort of womanliness, that aspect of womanliness, is now being played by Ryan Gosling. The New York Times went nuts over this musical number. Oh, what a wonderful, wonderful thing it is that a guy is now playing essentially the role of Marilyn Monroe, that the ultimate woman is now being played by a guy. Then there was this strong man, John Cena, who was a big muscle builder, was in a routine where Jimmy Kimmel, famous blackface actor, guy who does wonderful, wonderful imitations of black people. I just showed up Oprah. He did Oprah. He's done great blackface. You have to say about Kimmel, one thing he really does well is blackface. So that's why he's hosting the Oscars, because the one thing the left loves is blackface. They just think it's great, unless a right-wing person does it, and then it's a sin. But Jimmy Kimmel gets away with it. And so there was an old show in which David Niven, the great British actor, was giving an award, and a guy streaked him when streaking was a thing. So he ran by naked, and then Jimmy Kimmel says, well, what would happen if that happened today? And then John Cena is supposed to come out, but he doesn't. And here's a little bit of that.
What's going on? You're supposed to run across the stage.
I changed my mind. I don't want to do the streaker bit anymore.
What do you mean you don't want to do the streaker bit anymore? We're doing it.
I just don't feel right about it, man. It's an elegant event. You know, honestly, you should feel shame right now for suggesting such a tasteless idea.
So the strong man, and he also ultimately does come out, though he covers himself with an envelope, the strong man has to be humiliated, ridiculed. The New York Times now runs a story, why should a man's nudity be funny when a woman's isn't? Why should there be a difference between the way we look at a man's body and the way we look at a woman's body? And this is the whole idea, is to erase. There should not be any difference. Why? Because if there's difference, we're unequal. If we're unequal, it's not fair. Socialism is going to make everything fair. They're going to force everything into fairness. And as I've said before, the only place where things are fair is in the graveyard. There, everybody is equal when you're dead. All right. So male strength is mockable. Femininity can now be imitated by a guy. A guy can be Marilyn Monroe. But let me show you what's unfeminine. This is Dylan Mulvaney, who has released a song called Girlhood. And I think that was, he meant it girlhood as opposed to womanhood, because throughout he behaves, as he always does, he behaves like a little girl. There's a certain kind of pedophilia involved in his particular form of homosexuality, because that's all he is. He's a gay guy in a dress. So let's watch a little bit of that.
Monday, can't get out of bed. Tuesday morning, pick a mess. Wednesday, retail therapy. Cash or credit, I say yes. Thursday, had a walk of shame. Didn't even know his name. Weekends are for kissing friends. Friday night, all overspent. Saturday, we flirt for drinks. Playing wingman to our twinks. Sunday, the Twilight soundtrack. Cues my breakdown in the bath.
So just to give you that list, because in case you couldn't hear it, he's going through the days of the week. First day, he can't get out of bed. This is what he thinks girlhood is. This is his idea of girlhood. Next day, he is popping pills. The next day is retail therapy, which is buying things to make yourself feel better. Then he's doing a walk of shame, doesn't even know his name. He's spending too much money. He is flirting with people for drinks. And he then has a breakdown in the bath. So this what it reminded me of is Sex and the City. If you've ever seen Sex and the City, the minute you realize that Sex and the City is being acted by women, but it actually is being written by gay men, the entire show makes sense. All the conversations about sex are not conversations between women. They're conversations between gay men. I remember one episode, and I've only seen the show like three times just to test it out because it was so popular. There was one episode where the girls were all sitting around talking about sodomy, and I thought, those aren't girls. And this is before I found out that the show was being written about gay men. It's not the way girls talk about sodomy. So what you have is you have gay men imitating femininity. But again, you cannot be feminine as a man. You can only be effeminate in the same way you can't be manly as a woman. You can only be man-ish. So there's a reason that nearly 30% of Gen Z women now identify as LGBTQ. It's a Gallup survey. Women ages 18 to 26 were more than twice as likely to identify as millennial women were, according to this poll. Now, that is actually not a problem of growing homosexuality. That is a problem of having lost the meaning of who you are. I don't know. Obviously, nobody knows whether the soul itself is gendered. I don't know. I sort of suspect that, no, the soul is more complex than gender. God, after all, contains both genders because he made both men and women in his image. So we don't really know about that. But we do know that we only know ourselves as embodied persons. We only know ourselves until the end as embodied persons. And as embodied persons, we are gendered. Now, there are a lot of different things you can be as a man or a woman. As I said, this lady, Hannah, is a perfectly sweet, feminine woman, but she enjoys doing things that are usually associated with men. That's not the problem. The problem is when a man becomes a fluttery Dylan Mulvaney coward or a woman becomes a hyper-aggressive boss girl. That's when we start to think something's wrong. Something is wrong. And it's hard. These things are very hard to put into words. But the important thing is the human heart deeply, deeply desires femininity in the world. Femininity and masculinity are not random things. They are part of everything. They are part of the actual fabric of conscious life and all of human life. All of life is shot through with consciousness because God has both genders within him. The quality of what femininity is hard to describe, but it's at the very core of what makes us human. It really is. Feminists feel it as a burden, but wise men receive it as a gift, and wise women take it as a gift and a responsibility, and they find it within themselves, and that's what makes them live happy lives. That's what means you can be a woman who exists outside of the male power structure and yet is beyond and also somehow above the male power structure. So it's a very hard thing to describe what femininity is. You can get into your philosophical trouble doing it. I don't care whether I get into political trouble, but you can get into a philosophical mess. So I'm going to try and describe it through the way that I understand things, which is art. If you're a few years, or like me, a few centuries out of school and wondering, what did I even learn and what was the point? You're not alone. It's not too late. Hillsdale College is offering more than 40 free online courses. Hillsdale College's online courses allow you to learn about the works of C.S. Lewis, the rise and fall of the Roman Republic, and the history of the ancient Christian church, all from the comfort of your home. I have both taught at Hillsdale and used their online classes, and they're just great. I love them. They're absolutely terrific. If you're unsure where to start, check out American Citizenship and Its Decline with Victor Davis Hanson. In this 8-lecture course, Victor explores the history of citizenship in the West and its current threats. Threats like the erosion of the middle class, the disappearance of our borders, the growth of an unaccountable deep state, and the rise of globalist organizations. The course is self-paced, so you can start whenever and wherever you like. Start your free American Citizenship and Its Decline course with Victor Davis Hanson today. Go to hillsdale.edu/Klavan to enroll. There's no cost. It's easy to get started. That's hillsdale.edu/Klavan to enroll. hillsdale.edu/Klavan. You might want to start with their course on How Do You Spell Klavan. Final chapter, Venus and the Madonna. Now, I started out by saying this show had a theme, and the theme was the spiritual cost of material gain. And so the material gain here, if it is a material gain, is feminism. The spiritual cost is infinite as far as I'm concerned. The cost of no longer knowing what the gift and responsibility of femininity is. When you say, what is a woman? I'm not that interested in the medical definition as I am of what it is that women bring to the world. So a year or so ago, I was in Florence and I went to the Uffizi Gallery, one of the greatest galleries in the world. And I'm going to talk about some paintings that I saw there that really inspired me on this subject. But before I do, I want to take a look at this one Madonna, which is just representative of the way Madonnas were painted. This is, I think is, you pronounce the name, Cimabue, who was kind of at Goth, but before the Renaissance, the Gothic moving into the Renaissance. And when they painted Madonnas then, they were not very realistic. They were kind of two-dimensional. They were enthroned, always, Madonna's almost always wearing a blue mantle and with a red undervest a lot of times. And she's almost not human. She's like an icon almost. And the baby is like a little man. The Christ child is like a little man. And they're halos are like solid gold. They look like plates. They're just like round circles of gold behind them, not hers and the Christ Childs, and also all the angels around her have these kind of solid halos. But as we get closer into the Renaissance and into the higher Renaissance, the image of the Madonna starts to change in really important ways. Here's one by Fra Lippo Lippi. And if you can't see it, I'll try to describe it. She's obviously a human being. She is obviously based on a model. You see that her halo is no longer solid gold. It's almost like just a filigree of gold light above her. And she is extremely real. She's a real person. And this became a thing. At first, it was kind of shocking to people. But after time, people got used to it and they expected a Madonna who looked like a person. And so models were now being used. Specific models were being used. Now, Fra Lippo had a very talented student, apprentice, named Botticelli. And that wasn't his real name, but that was what he was called. And he does one of the most beautiful Madonnas that is in the Uffizi Gallery. And it is just absolutely spectacular. It is really, she is tremendously beautiful. She is a woman, but she is so beautiful, it's almost mind-boggling. And the effect, one effect that I should mention about having different faces on the Madonna, different real woman's faces, is it suggests that every woman potentially has the Madonna in her. Right? Because if the Madonna can be all these different faces, then she can be any woman. And in Fra Lippo Lippi's painting, which is, I think it's called a tondo, it's a round painting, and it's also kind of got a circular theme, which I'll get to in a second. But this is called the Madonna of the Magnificat, because she's writing in a book, and she's writing the Magnificat, which is her song from Luke, where she says, my soul doth magnify the Lord. That's what the Magnificat means. My soul doth magnify the Lord, and my spirit hath rejoiced in God my Savior, for he hath regarded the low estate of his handmaiden. For behold, from henceforth all generations shall call me blessed, for he that is mighty hath done to me great things, and holy is his name. So she is magnifying the Lord because the Lord has magnified her. And what you see is absolutely beautiful chain of events that's happening. There's a light above her head. Instead of a halo, there's a light above her head, which I think is the Holy Spirit. And the angels, who don't have any halos whatsoever, one of them has a little bit of light kind of coming out. They just look like young men. Has a little bit of light coming out of his head. They are placing a filigreed crown on her head. So the Spirit is crowning her with her role that she has accepted as the Madonna, as the mother of Christ. And she is holding the Christ child on her lap, and the child is much more of a real baby. And she has that blue mantle, and it's open on the red tunic. So it kind of looks like her body is open. You know, it looks like, I'm not in the sense of nudity, but it looks like her womb is exposed and the baby is kind of coming out of the womb. And she is linked to him by holding a pomegranate. And a pomegranate was the symbol of fertility because it's a round thing that has all kinds of seeds inside. But it was also, so it's like a womb that holds all the generations in it. But it's also a symbol of the tears, the blood of the heart of Christ. So it's a symbol of death and a symbol of resurrection. So it's birth, death, and resurrection, all symbolizing that. And it links her hand to the hand of the baby. And then she's writing the Magnificat in the book, saying that she has been magnified by the Lord, and that's what's happening above her. So it's kind of a circular thing about how in giving birth to this child who is the incarnate God, she has received from God, she has given God back into the world, and that has reconnected her to the holiness. So it's this absolute idea that motherhood is more than itself, that motherhood exists in a field of meaning, that it links to meaning above itself. Botticelli also painted one of the most famous paintings of all time, which is the Venus, the Birth of Venus is called, but it's actually not the Birth of Venus. It's Venus coming to shore on a shell. And this was a very shocking painting because it was the first life-size female nude in the Christian era who was not Eve being expelled from the garden. So normally, a woman's nudity was associated with shame. Now, she's covering herself in a famous, it's called the Venus Pudica. It's based on the gesture of the first Greek female nude, because the Greeks like boys, right? And Praxiteles did a famous Venus, Aphrodite, he would have called her, a famous Aphrodite. And this is modeled on that Aphrodite. And the Venus Boudica is covering herself with her hands. And you'll see this a lot in statues of Venus. She's obviously covering her private parts with her hair. And she's got her hand up around her breast so that you can still see them. And it's called Boudica. It comes from a word that means both genitalia, female genitalia, and shame. It means also shame. So she is covering herself as she comes in. But still, this was a nude woman. She is not quite realistic, but she's still attractive, still appealing. There's a woman waiting to cover her up. But Botticelli is a religious man, and he's not just doing it to paint a nude. He's doing it because there's a new philosophy empowering the Renaissance, and it's called Neoplatonism, where because they've rediscovered the philosophy of Plato, who is looked upon almost as one of the apostles, because he almost was a Christian. It was his philosophy links to Christianity so closely that he is frequently deemed a holy man. And Marcello Ficino was the name of one of the chief interpreters of Plato. And he talked about God as being the unity of love within the chaos, a unity of love within the chaos, who then starts to create. And out of his unity, he creates many, and those many people, many of them human beings, they have an urge both to imitate God in creation, which is what women do when they give birth, but they also are drawn by beauty back to God. Love emits beauty, and beauty draws us back to love, and God is love. And so this Venus is at once the god of erotic love, but she's also the god of platonic beauty. Her beauty has more meaning than just the fact that she's a desirable woman, which she also is. So in this philosophy, motherhood, sex, and beauty, and the desire for women were also the desire for the pure beauty that comes down from love. Goethe, the poet, would say later, he said, the eternal feminine leads us upward. The eternal feminine leads us upward. Now, as we lost our faith in God, two things happened to the visual arts. One, that it became abstract because we no longer trusted the human experience, because the human experience is guaranteed by God. The fact that God can become a human, that he can become Jesus Christ, means that there is something about humanity that is in touch with the ultimate reality, even if we don't know what it is. So as that faith faded, the people started just painting squiggles and shapes and things like that, because what did it matter? Where was the beauty? We can't trust what beauty is. It's just an opinion. And all of this nonsense that became the theory, so that the visual arts moved to photography and movies and now video games and things like that. But the other thing that happened was art became hyper-real. It became photographic. And there's a famous painting that I can't really show on the air by Courbet. I've mentioned it before. He painted a picture, and I believe it's called The Origin of the World. And one of the postmodern psychoanalysts, Lacan, Jacques Lacan, owned it and had it up in his room. And it's just a photographic rendering of a vagina, of a woman lying. You can see part of her torso, but mostly it's just looking up between her legs. And that's all it is. So in other words, once you separate from the meaning of things, once you separate from the higher meaning, once you stop using beauty to move upward, once you left simply with lust, once you stop looking upon creativity as part of the work of God, of giving birth as part of the work of God, you're left with just, you know, a meaningless birth, a meaningless life. Now, you hear feminists all the time talking about the male gaze because they are materialists. Feminism is socialism. Socialism is materialism. And materialism means that life has no meaning. It's just stuff. And so everything is about power. The only thing that can be talked about is about power. And in fact, femininity is a thing that has power, but it doesn't have the kind of material power that people talk about. It is a spiritual power. And if you refuse to take spiritual ideas into account, you cannot understand why you should be feminine except to be seductive. Feminists are afraid of the male gaze, but the fact is, A, you can't escape the male gaze. The male gaze creates femininity. In other words, there is no femininity without masculinity. These are two things that are connected with each other. There is no masculinity without femininity. These things relate to one another and are like two sides, to use a cliched metaphor, they're like two sides of the same coin. Women have the power to direct the male gaze to something higher than themselves. And this is what femininity is. It is the power to direct the male gaze to something beyond themselves by the way they behave and what they represent to men. And you know what I'm talking about. You know the kind of woman who makes you think of more than herself, who makes you feel more than just lust. I mean, listen, lust makes the world go round. I'm not knocking desire. I'm simply saying that desire can become something greater than itself, which is one of the things that happens in a good marriage, is you maintain, if you're lucky, your desire, but it also becomes something more. It becomes an expression of love. Either life means nothing and everything is about power, or life is connected to a higher level of meaning, and everything is ultimately about that higher level of meaning, which is love. Femininity is a deep responsibility, but it's also a power, but it's a spiritual power. It's the ultimate power in a way, because it's the power that connects the human mind to something above itself, to a kind of creativity, a kind of beauty that is more than the beauty of bodies and more of the beauty of things that we just see. It matters how men and women regard one another, and each of us has a say in what that's going to look like and what.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.
What that's going to mean, and feminism has made us shut our eyes. And feminists, in my opinion, live in darkness. And that's why they don't know who they are. And that's why they don't know what sexuality they are. And that's why they feel more and more depressed. And that's why they're becoming trans and taking pills, and why people who are trans are totally lost, because they can't capture that thing that they're looking for. They're looking for it in themselves, and you have to look for it in women. But we don't have to do those things. We don't have to close our eyes. We don't have to live in darkness. The choice is ours, and we shouldn't forget that. It's not a fight. It is a choice that we can make, and that will change everything. The iconic leftist tears tumbler is back. Everybody wants one, but I have one. And there's only one way to get it, by becoming a Daily Wire Plus annual member. Not only does your annual membership give you unparalleled access to ad-free, uncensored shows from your favorite Daily Wire hosts, on-demand hit movies, series, and groundbreaking documentaries, but now that membership also includes our Leftist Tears Tumblr. Soccer moms have their Stanleys, but you're raising the bar with the iconic Leftist Tears Tumblr. New Daily Wire Plus Insider annual members get a free Tumblr, or put your money where your values are and join us on the front line in the fight to reshape culture with an all-access membership, and get two Leftist Tears Tumblrs for free. Join now and get your free Leftist Tears Tumblr at dailywireplus.com. Clavin clapbacks. Clavin clapbacks. Both Clavin and clapbacks are spelled with a K. Clavin clapbacks at dailywire.com. No E's in Clavin. K-L-A-V-A-N clapbacks at dailywire.com. Comment on the show. We love to hear from you, whether you are correct or you disagree with me. We want to know. This first letter is from Joel. He says, thanks for your interview with Jay Burden. I think you came away more encouraged than I did. Many of his observations were good. However, his lack of concern over the corruption of those in power reveals that the lessons of the founders have not found a home in the new right, if Jay Burden is typical. Well, you know, I don't know. I think Jay Burden is actually much more intelligent and moderated, maybe not moderate, but moderated, than a lot of the guys I've been listening to on the young right. But he too, just judging by some of the people he respects, he too, they are drawn to monarchy, I would say, is what a lot of them are drawn to. And I'm not just saying that about Jay Burden, because I thought he was a little cagey. I want to remind you that I said before the interview that just because I was having him on didn't mean I agreed with what he had to say. What I found encouraging about him was at least he wasn't, he wasn't at least expressing anti-Semitism. He wasn't expressing bigotry, which I've heard of a lot of the people on the young right. He didn't seem committed to republicanism. He didn't seem committed to democracy. And you're right about this. I think that is a flaw, that they don't understand that, first of all, having kings wasn't as good as you think it was. It's not as nice as they remember it. They get caught up in the kind of symbolism of kingship, which there is something natural about kingship, I think, and I do think we all feel a little bit drawn toward that in times of chaos like this. But the point of the founders was power has to be limited because power corrupts. And you're right, I'm not hearing that a lot from him, but he's a smart guy, and I'm hoping he is a moderate enough person, or at least a person of goodwill, that maybe he'll start to think that through, because he's 24, so he can have possibly read enough to actually have a full philosophy. Hi, Drew. I'm writing this in response. This is from Diane. I'm writing this in response to your numerous tributes to the female rack and your insistence on gazing at it or them. I can't imagine a wife being comfortable with her husband gazing at and lusting after large female racks. When the husband is with her and he closes his eyes, what does he visualize? At some point, she must realize that the husband wishes she were some other female with a beautiful body. There are a lot of wives who will never admit they are hurt by that, but they are. Well, I actually kind of think that that's wrong. I mean, there's a thin line between honesty and boorishness. And on this show, I try to cross it as often as I can because it's funny. But in real life, I'm actually incredibly polite. But I also am an honest person. And I've never understood this thing, this meme about women feeling that they have to be lied to be respected. So do I look fat in this? Oh, I wouldn't dare tell you look fat in this. My wife never looks fat in anything, but if she came and said, do I look fat in this? And she did, I would say, yes, that dress is not becoming to you. I have said it. You know, that dress is ill becoming to you. It doesn't make you look good. And because I'm honest, and my honesty is part of our relationship, and she expects that of me. However, two things about this. One of the things about being honest is men like women, they like shapely women, they like all women, they like looking at pretty women. And you know, that doesn't mean I turn around when a pretty woman walks by me and I'm with my wife. That would be rude. But it also means that she knows, you know, that I'm not going to lie to her about it, because she would just think I was having her on. She wouldn't think, he's being so nice to me. He only loves me. He only thinks about me. The other thing I want to say is I feel, obviously, that sex in marriage is very important. I feel it's a very important part of marriage. And I feel you should pay attention to it while you're doing it. I do not think you should be fantasizing. I remember a New Yorker cartoon of a guy at his computer fantasizing about a naked woman, and the next panel he's in bed with a naked woman and he's fantasizing about a computer. No, I think you should be paying attention to what you're doing and the person you're doing it with, and hopefully in your marriage the love is strong and so it actually inspires desire as well. But it's just being honest about the nature of men. Nobody thinks they're anything else. Become a member today. Go to dailywire.com/subscribe and use code Klavan at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans, or else what will happen to you right now will happen to you, which is you are plunged into Klavanlessness while the rest of us traipse off happily to member block.
That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
X-Stone, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
X-Stone, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.